Welcome to the Cognitive Warrior Podcast, where we present and discuss current events involving law enforcement and the communities we serve. So it's been a while since our last podcast, with all the craziness with COVID going on and the current outlook of this law enforcement profession. Kept me off the air because I was very upset by everything, and I still am, by the way. But I'm at least at a point where I think we can get back and start having some discussions, again, based upon what the information is that's out there and available. So this podcast, we're going to discuss professional language. And what I mean by that is, as a profession, are we using the proper language to tell folks who we are and what we do? Right now, we are still borrowing heavily from the military. Now, the military's language is very correct and adequate for their mission. Again, if you look back to the podcast we've had in the past, we talked about the importance of mission when it comes to the warrior ethos. So as we look at this discussion about profession and language, we're going to talk about predominantly de-escalation and force, because right now those are the two heated words in our profession. And de-escalation, because of a lack of knowledge and understanding, has become a dirty word and a word used to describe what people believe is our inadequate training. So we are going to clarify de-escalation and force, and then leave it up to you to determine, is force actually the word we should be using? And we'll talk about some other language we have borrowed from the military. Again, very appropriate for the military to use, but not so much for us when we understand the vast difference between our missions and who we are dealing with. We are dealing with citizens, and the military is in the position of dealing with enemies, and that gives them a lot more latitude and also allows for collateral damage. Law enforcement does not allow us collateral damage, nor a whole lot of latitude when dealing with our citizens. So the reason for this discussion is to clarify the language we are using and try to take back control of the direction of this conversation and understanding how vital it is for communication in our profession. And when you look again at every time you talk about issues within organizations, within relationships, or between people, the number one failure for us is communication. So we have to take a close look at this. So I want to start off by asking you, when you think about your response matrix, whatever it may be, we talk about officer presence, verbal communication, as opposed to verbal commands, open hand techniques, chemical weapons, closed hands, non-lethal or less lethal options, and then lethal options. When we talk about and ask you, what's the first thing that comes to mind when we say de-escalation? Well, generally what we get is people say, oh, that's that talking stuff. So then we have to ask, so what's the first thing that comes to mind when we say force? Well, generally it's everything else from open hand techniques all the way up to lethal response. The reality of it is when we're done with this conversation and we actually use the dictionary to define these two terms, because that's where we're going to have to go to, because statute does not do it, at least not in the state of Florida. We do not define force, nor do we define de-escalation. So we will go to the dictionary for that. So force is the predominant language which we are using right now to describe a core component of what law enforcement is supposedly doing. So we need to look for the definition. And the definition, common ones, look to force being defined as strength or power exerted upon an object, physical coercion, violence. That's from dictionary.com. Or you get power or violence used on a person or thing, and that's Merriam-Webster. In both of those, you see the term or the word violence used to help define force. So for me, I believe we need to look up definition of the term violence. So when we do that, we're going to notice an interesting thing right off the bat. So again, Merriam-Webster talks about the use of physical force to harm someone, to damage property, etc. So we've already used the word force to define violence and the word violence to define force. We go to the Oxford Dictionary, it becomes behavior involving physical force intended to hurt, damage, or kill someone or something. Again, we are using force to define violence and violence to define force. With that, seeing that in writing from known sources of definitions, there's a direct correlation between violence and force. So I ask the folks out there, those of you who have been in law enforcement for any length of time, where in your training have you been taught to intentionally hurt, damage, or kill someone? The answer is we have not ever been taught that. Our entire training has been based on stopping the action that's occurring that is threatening others or ourselves. So let's look at the definition of de-escalation, the current dirty word for law enforcement, at least the way it's being used against us or towards us. So when you look at definitions, they say decrease in intensity, magnitude, etc. That's dictionary.com. Merriam-Webster says to decrease in extent, volume, or scope. And then the Collins Dictionary says to reduce the level or intensity of. Again, listen to those definitions. To decrease in intensity or magnitude, decrease in extent, volume, or scope, or reduce the level or intensity of whatever it may be, actions or events. Think about it. What is your job as a police officer? Well, it's de-escalation to a T. Everything you are taught, whether it's from your presence to your verbal communication skills, all the way up to and including less lethal options or even the lethal option, it's all designed to do what? Exactly that. Stopping the threat means we are trying to decrease in intensity, magnitude, extent, volume, or scope, or level intensity of those actions. That is your job every day and all day. There's also a term coming out now where we are using non-escalation. I cry foul on that. Now, I've been on the job in some way, shape, or form for almost 25 years. Granted, the last few have been in a voluntary basis, so I don't know that many of you would say that that counts, but I'm still involved with the profession. What I can tell you is this, as long as I've been on the job, still carry a badge, whenever I'm on the road and I'm driving, and I see a marked unit behind me, right behind me, the first thing that happens is my heart rate increases and I start looking at my speedometer and checking around, what have I done? Now that's from a law enforcement officer of almost 25 years. I am already escalated. My heart rate has escalated. The physiological aspects of my system have escalated. As a police officer, every encounter you have where you initiate your lights or you go and talk to somebody, you are dealing with somebody who has an escalated physiological response, if nothing else. So your entire job is about de-escalation. This non-escalation nonsense is just that. We don't have the luxury of dealing with people who are not escalated. If you have any doubts about this, is very similar to when you were in school and you got called to the principal's office. Well, how often did you get called there for good things? Even if it turned out to be good, when you first walked through the door, what was your heart rate? Were you sweaty? Were your palms sweaty? Were you nervous? The answer is yes. So unfortunately, we are in that principal role because we are the disciplinarians of society. And most of the time when you encounter law enforcement, it's because something has happened that should not have. Even when you were on the side of maybe being the victim or the witness, you still end up having increased heart rate, sweaty problems, etc., because you're dealing with the equivalent of the principal of the school. So getting back on track with de-escalation and use of force, I want you to think about when you talk your response continuum, whether you call it a force continuum, force matrix, response to resistance, wherever you are in this attempt to correct things, they all refer to a process with what goal in mind? Well, the goal is to increase in intensity or magnitude, to decrease the extent, volume, or scope, or to reduce the level or intensity of a crisis, of resistance, or force from a citizen or subject. That is it to a T. So de-escalation is an integral part of defensive tactics, not a separate action. It is in everything we do. So going back to the standard response to resistance and aggression matrix is what I prefer to call them, where we talk about officer presence, verbal communication, open hand techniques, all those things all the way up to lethal response. What should the first thing be that comes to mind when we say de-escalation? Is it just the talking part, or is it the entire process or each phase or each particular response in your response to resistance and aggression? Meaning, when you utilize a taser, are you utilizing it as a force implement, meaning intending to cause harm or injury by known definition? Or are you using it to attempt to de-escalate the person's action? What I'll tell you is this, every tool you've been issued is an effort for de-escalation. There are times where we get involved where simple verbal communication alone is not enough. Again, I can tell you for a fact, if I am coming up and I am stabbing you to death, the last thing you're gonna want a police officer when they arrive to do is to attempt to simply verbally de-escalate. That is not what you want. That is not gonna save your life. Now, don't get me wrong. I believe we should be verbally communicating all the time. If I deem that I have to have a lethal response, I should be communicating what's happening as it's happening to the best of my ability. I will not halt everything else, refuse to use my other de-escalation options because some pundit has told me that de-escalation simply means verbal communication. That is absolutely wrong. So again, I want you thinking along the terms of force. Are we really using force by the known definition? I will tell you the answer is absolutely not. Now, I get it. I have been told, but statute says officers are allowed to use reasonable force. Well, you know what? Statute may be giving us permission to use force, but as a profession, we have chosen not to resort to force, but to stay within the de-escalation realm. This is not semantics. This is not wordsmithing. This is fact-based. This is stepping back, taking a look at this profession and say, what is it we are actually doing? What is our training and what does it reflect? And are we the military? The answer is we are not the military. Have we borrowed from them heavily? Yes, we have, because we were literally born from the military. However, this nation, along with others, was smart enough to realize the two have to be separate. Protecting or policing your citizenry cannot be done by the military. The mission is too different. Every country that has used the military for that has suffered tremendously. So what does this mean for our profession, and what does this mean as a citizen? Well, again, we have to go back and remind ourselves the Peelian principles. Again, I will go to principle number 7, which states the people are the police are the people. The only difference being that police officers have chosen for a full-time profession to do that which is incumbent upon every citizen when it comes to maintaining law and order, keeping the peace and civility. That is everyone's responsibility. However, there isn't anybody talking about that. Right now, the police are the problem. And I know some very smart people, very good friends with them, who continuously say, well, the police have to be the adults. No, when you're an adult, everybody's supposed to be an adult. We cannot continue this nonsense of a higher standard for a profession over everyone else. There is a standard that we should expect from every member of society. Law enforcement officers should exemplify that standard, but there is no such thing as being held to a higher one. Again, when we do that, we are relegating people to a caste system, meaning you're from here, so you're allowed to behave this way. You're from there, so you can behave that way. Nonsense. Everybody should be expected to meet the same moral standards. Now, does it mean everybody will? Of course not. We're humans. We fight this battle every day, or those of us who have the warrior ethos have chosen to fight that battle every day to try to be the best we can be. So let's talk about some other words we have borrowed from the military. Again, the military has a right to use this terminology. It most absolutely fits within their mission, but it's very, very different for us. Now, this is where we'll get some folks. I understand this profession. I've been in it for a while. I now sit on the side of not being in it full time and being mostly a citizen and not a police officer every day. So I'm seeing both sides of this coin. I understand the bravado that comes with this profession, but I want to caution us about what we're really trying to be when we talk about the warrior ethos and selfless service and service to others, that we start really thinking about the words we choose. So I'm going to pick another one that's come out, especially since we've started responding to active shooters. Unfortunately, that's become a more common occurrence for all of society, but especially law enforcement. We talk about a class I went to, talked about violence of action. Now, I get it, the military uses this and they use it appropriately. But the term, the word violence, when you talk about what does it look like, it's very unpredictable and chaotic. Now, where in law enforcement are we allowed to be unpredictable and chaotic? With that, that means there's collateral damage. Well, the military is allowed a certain amount of collateral damage. We are not allowed any collateral damage in law enforcement. So I ask you to start considering, are we really responding with violence of action, or are we more inclined to respond with precision of action? Meaning we remain cognitive. We keep our thinking brain as part of it because, remember, we are not using force. That is not our goal. That is not within our mission. So I really want you guys to start weighing what you're saying, because here's what we know. They're doing a lot of research and even more in the medical profession about the power of words and what they can do for folks and how they respond and how they behave. There's a lot of science behind word choice can impact and word selection can impact and influence the way we behave. So as we learn more about this, it becomes even more important for us to professionalize our language, utilize words and information, and communicate in a manner that properly reflects our training and what we do and how we do it. This is not semantics. These are actual definitions that are available at any member of society's fingertips. We are not trying to make things up. That's already been tried in Seattle. A few years back, they tried to make up a definition of de-escalation, and it was a horrible failure. We have to stop doing that. If we already have words that are known to everyone and available for definitions that are easily accessible, why are we trying to make things up? We do not need to do that. It's been done already. So as you guys continue this, and as citizens, as we continue, we need to look at what is the proper communication for law enforcement and what they do. I ask us to understand military played a huge role in law enforcement. Again, they were born from that directly back in the time of the Romans, even to the point where the warrior ethos and all those things that are under attack, just so you know, look up the meaning of the word samurai. I think you'll be very interested to know that the term samurai, paraphrasing now, of course, comes to basically mean serving others. That's what the word means in that language. So even the samurai warrior, their word meant to serve others. That is what law enforcement is here to do. That's what we have always been here to do. Do we get it 100% right? No. And the reason being is we're dealing with people. So what were some of the best times on the job? And I will tell them, some of the best times were the people I worked with and the people I encountered in day-to-day work or citizenry. On the flip side, you know, what were some of the most challenging times? Well, some of the most challenging times were some of the people I worked with and some of the people I encountered on the job. People are the best and worst things in life. Why? Because it's a challenge for us to be the best we can be every single day. Why, I ask you, are we only expecting law enforcement officers to strive for that perfection and not a single other member of society is held to that standard? That is unfair, it's unattainable, and is a root cause of why this nation is going down the direction it's going, and it is not a good one. So as we close out this episode, I want us everybody, and this isn't just for the people in the profession, this is for the leadership. Whatever you think you may be, and I have a hard time using leadership today because I don't see a lot of it. It takes courage. I don't see a lot of courage happening right now. I see people jumping on the bandwagon to try and save their job. You know, as a leader, you're supposed to be out there doing your job. Instead, you're fighting to keep it and forgetting to fight to do it. And your people are suffering. The citizens are suffering. I'm not saying law enforcement doesn't have some things we have to work on. We do. But if we're going to sit here as a nation and claim that everybody else has absolutely no part to play in this, you are lying to yourselves. We are lying to ourselves. And I get to say this because now I am 99% of the time a citizen. I have no police authority when I walk around because I'm a reservist. I'm a volunteer. I am standing in both sides of this discussion. I have a very different perspective. I'm not saying it's right or wrong, I'm just saying it's different. I'm asking everybody else to take a step back. We have got to get out of this emotional state and allow our brains to function. That's what separates us from the rest of the creatures on this planet, or it's supposed to separate us. So remember, and this is to everybody again, not just the men and women in law enforcement, but to every American citizen and everybody in America, as you look to properly embrace the warrior ethos, specifically the cognitive warrior, ask yourself, are you doing the right thing at the right time, in the right way, and for the right reasons, and continue to be the reader, the writer, the thinker, and the fighter when needed. Until next time, stay safe, stay alert, and stay informed. This has been the Cognitive Warrior Podcast, and we want to thank Audacity for their open source podcast recording software. Theme music from filmmusic.io, The Descent by Kevin MacLeod, at iComptech.com license, CC by creativecommons.org/license, and the Gallagher Westfall Group for the Leadership Test and the Reader, Writer, Thinker, Fighter.